And right now we're going to the phones where we're joined by Kevin Makins. He's the author of the book, Why Would Anyone Go to Church? A Young Community's Quest to Reclaim Church for Good. Kevin, welcome to the Wake Up Call Morning Show.
Morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So, yeah. Kevin, obviously, I mean, you're addressing a key thing, and I'm a pastor myself. I'm, you know, obviously I'm a big believer in the local church. It's, you know, I believe just absolutely essential. It's not optional to us as Christians. It's essential for us to be part of it. And one of my big pet peeves is when people say, well, I don't need to organize religion to follow God. I don't need to be a part of a group. And usually there's a lot of reasons. There can be a lot of reasons behind that. What did you find as you were writing this book and kinds of things that you've encountered? People may be resistant or hesitant to be part of a local church.
Yeah, it's a great question and a really important one for us to ask. There's a variety of answers to the question. Some of the reasons are really compelling. Some of the reasons are maybe not as compelling. You know, I talk to people about why they would or wouldn't go to church, especially if they would call themselves a Christian. And sometimes it's really like, yeah, you know, I want to play hockey or I want to play football or, you know, my Sunday mornings are given to other activities. And, you know, those kind of things are like, okay, maybe there's just not a priority for somebody and we could talk about that. But other times I'm finding that people have pretty compelling reasons why they don't go to church. You know, they say, look, if I go for a hike in nature, I'm going to connect with God more there than I am in a kind of stuffy building in a pew on a Sunday. Or they might say, you know, yeah, I go to church, but it kind of ends up feeling like a big show. There's like a lot of lights and a lot of guitars, and it just feels to me like it's missing something important. Or people might say, look, I look at the history of what the church has done, and there's just so much damage that's mixed in what's good that I just don't know if it's worth being a part of something that has so much baggage. And so I try to start the book and try to start engaging in every conversation by saying, like, let me understand why you don't think this is something that's worth giving your energy to. I don't want to judge you for that. I actually want to just sit and listen and try to really understand and hear you, because in your critique of the church, there's going to be something important for me to learn and for me to listen to. But then what we also found over the last 10 years of being a church together is that there are a lot of really compelling reasons to be the local church. They're just not always the reasons that you might expect.
And with the cultural shift, especially pretty much exponentially here, even in the last couple of decades, and you say we can't do church the way we've always done it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we've done with the church has often been fruitful, it's often been damaging, but simply doing what we've always done before isn't going to work. But neither is chasing, in air quotes, I'll say relevance. Neither is chasing the idea that if we just make this kind of look different or we package it differently, that it's going to be compelling to people. What we found, and we're in a pretty secular culture up in Canada, is that no one was going to church because it was better than the concerts in town. No one was going to church because the sermons were more interesting than a TED Talk. I promise you my sermons aren't. But they were becoming a part of the church because they wanted to be a part of something that was much more old, rooted, revolutionary, kind of upside down than anything else that they encountered in the culture around us. And so the church, I don't think just needing to go forward with kind of new ways of doing things is the only answer. I think we also have to go backwards and say, what were the things that have made the church endure for 2,000 years? That if the church has endured in times of trauma, in times of pandemic, in times of oppression, every country and culture on earth, in cathedrals, in catacombs, the church continued to endure. And my real question is why? It can't be because the music is nice. It can't be because the sermon is interesting or the coffee is good. There has to be some primordial reasons why people have continued to give themselves to the church. And those are the things we started to discover as we gathered together as a local church over the last decade.
Now, should a church, so many churches try to do this, should a church try to become cool to draw people in?
I mean, they can try, but I think that anybody who's actually cool is going to sniff out really quickly that we're actually pretty, you know, not cool. So, you know, you come to church and it's like, we're a cool church, and now we're all going to pray together, and we're going to encourage one another. It's like, that's not cool at all. You know, like the things that churches, anyone cool will come and say, look, yeah, it's not that great a show. You guys are really earnest. You're very into this Jesus guy. I just don't think trying to cool is a worthy cause. I think trying to trick people into coming to church is a worthy cause. That what we can be instead of cool is we can be a place that's transformative. We can be a community that is radically different from the rest of the world. And in that countercultural way of being together, we actually become more relevant and we become more interesting to the world around us. But chasing clout, chasing cool, I just don't think is a worthy use of our energy. I think it's fair to say, to nuance that out, it's actually pretty beautiful when people who are together in the church are authentically living it out in a way that, you know, reveals kind of who they are and the culture they're in. So I've been a part of churches that actually have a bit of a cool side to them, but it's certainly not because they try to be cool. It's just that they happen to be filled with interesting people.
They're authentic.
Yeah.
The reflection of the actual gathered community.
And you make a great point, and this is one that I've felt for a long time, that, you know, it's to be relevant. You know, we often just end up, you know, mirroring the culture. But our greatest relevance is our difference. Our greatest relevance is the things that we can offer people in the church that they can't get out in the secular world.
Absolutely. I mean, try saying to people right now, you're going to go into a building and spend time in a potluck with people who you don't agree with politically. That's like part of the church's DNA. You are going to sit across the table from people that you wouldn't pick, and they're going to be annoying and weird, and you're going to think they're wrong. And yet, because of this person of Jesus, you are now family, and you're stuck with each other. And so you're going to sit together at the table and learn to listen, learn to forgive, learn to quote the Apostle Paul, to bear with one another out of love and reverence for Christ. You know, you're going to have to bear with one another. But that's a much more compelling vision of what it means to be human and what it means to be community than simply chasing relevance.
Now, one of the things you talk about in the book is, you know, each generation has its own needs. I mean, each generation addresses different questions in their culture and in their time. What are some of the things you're seeing in the younger generation, the millennial, Generation Y? What do they need from church that maybe other generations weren't looking for because they had other needs?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think the decline of Christendom, the decline of kind of Christianity as a powerful institution, which you guys are certainly have a lot more Christendom, a lot more Christianity in with power than we do up in Canada. But, you know, as you mentioned off the top, it is declining rapidly in America as well.
Yes.
And what that means is that people aren't going to church now because that's like good people do. Again, in air quotes, good people, good Christians. Be that, you know, you'd wake up on Sunday and if you weren't at church, people would notice and they'd go, oh, well, that's not a good person. But now going to church, for some people, that means that you're kind of morally suspicious if you're going to church. So nobody in my generation is going to church because they have to. No one's going to church because they are expected by the culture to do so. So those who are participating in the church are really making an intentional decision to do this. They're making an intentional decision to be a part of the church. And that means that they need it to be more than a Sunday show. It needs to be a living, breathing organism, a community of people who are being shaped into the life of Jesus. And that means beyond the building. You know, that means not just going to a building once a week. It doesn't just mean going to a building four times a week. It actually means going out into our neighborhoods, into our cities, and being a community together across these places where we live. And so that's like a much more all-encompassing, holistic vision of what it means to be the church. And I just don't think a lot of young people are going to join the church unless that's what they're becoming a part of. They're not joining this as a hobby. They're not trying to join a club. They really want to be a part of the church. And so that needs to be a 24/7 reality.
Now, you mentioned differences between Ohio and Canada. And I mean, there's probably differences in how you would do church between Ohio, Montana, or California. Can you use that same concept about geography for even inner city versus suburbs versus country?
Yeah, I think the church, you know, we've often thought, you know, especially if you go to the big church conferences, they'll say, hey, listen, this is what you're supposed to do. And they give you the list of five things you're supposed to do and believe in order to grow your church.
Right.
And that might work in Toledo, you know, but does it work in Los Angeles? Does it work in Denver, Colorado? Does it work in Hamilton, Ontario, my city, or in Toronto? What's it going to look like in Germany? What's it going to look like in South Africa? What's it going to look like in China? Like, the church has always had to respond to the cultural reality where it is located. You know, so when we were thinking about church planting, we wanted to make sure that we didn't take some foreign plant and try to plunk it down the garden of our city. It really had to be something that grew up from the ground up. You know, it had to be a grassroots expression of both the gospel, but also of the local place that we were put. So it had to feel distinctly like our city. People in the city had to be able to taste and smell it and say, hey, this is familiar. This feels like where we are. And yet it's also showing what the life of Jesus looks like in this particular place among these kinds of particular people. And so I think the church needs to embrace geography, embrace where we are located, and not try to pretend that every church is going to look the same or think the same. There's going to be things that we all cling to that we hold in common, common confession. But beyond that, a lot of this is going to require being good missionaries, which means that we need to pay attention to the soil of our particular places.
We're talking with Kevin Makins. The book is Why Would Anyone Go to Church? A Young Community's Quest to Reclaim Church for Good. And Kevin, how can folks find out more information about your ministry and about the book?
Yeah, you can go to my website, Kevin Makins, M-A-K-I-N-S. com, and on there, there's a link to all sorts of projects I've worked on, and certainly a link to the new book that has just come out. And I hope that people, you can also pick it up on Amazon or any bookstore that you go to can order it for you if they don't have it in. And yeah, hope people read Why Would Anyone Go to Church and hope that they love it.
And who do you think would most benefit from reading this book?
Oh, the book is for anybody who loves the church or wishes that they could. You know, it's for anybody who looks at the church and says, ah, I can see the potential here, but gosh, sometimes it just drives me nuts. And I really think that's a feeling that anyone who loves the church is going to feel, and certainly a feeling that those who have maybe walked away or are on the church, certainly they're going to resonate with that as well.
Excellent. Hey, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
By the way, as a pastor, I got to tell you my favorite story in the book, because we've all been here, the night the children never came. We've all been down that road, Kevin.
We have all flopped and foiled and failed in countless ways, and at least to get good stories out of it.
That's right. And if you want to know what that story is, well, you got to get the book and read it. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it this morning.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on.